Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Luke's English Podcast is made possible thanks to the premium subscription. And if you sign up to LEP Premium, you can access and unlock the full episode archive for the premium section. And there are over 100 episodes, videos, audio episodes, PDFs. And basically what I do is I take target language that occurred naturally in a conversation of the podcast. I break it all down in a list, go through all the explanations and lots of examples and demonstrations, collocations, synonyms. And then I test you on all of it. And then there are pronunciation drills where you can listen and repeat after me with the target language included. And I tried to make it the complete package, focusing on everything really. To get all the information and to sign up, you can go to teacherluke.co.uk/premium info. You're listening to Luke's English Podcast. For more information, visit teacherluke.co.uk. Hello, listeners. Here's an episode about English tests like TOEFL and the Duolingo English test. And I hope this will be an interesting episode, even for those of you who have no plans to take one of these tests. I'm joined by online English teacher Josh McPherson. I guess you've heard of TOEFL, right? The TOEFL test. You've probably heard of that. And the Duolingo English test is a test made by Duolingo, that company which helps you learn languages on your phone and which seems to be managed by a green cartoon owl who is some kind of master of learning English. But yes, Duolingo, they make a test now and it's getting really big. So some time in this episode is spent describing the tests, but we don't spend an hour just describing TOEFL and the other test. Most of the time we are doing samples from the test, commenting on my performance in a TOEFL speaking task, discussing testing methods in general, and giving comments on ways to perform well, particularly in the speaking parts of a test like TOEFL and IELTS. Also, tests should be reliable, and having genuinely good English skills should, of course, cause you to get decent results. So a lot of the tips relating to getting a better score are also generally good tips for improving your level of English. So even if you're not planning to take one of these tests, the tips and advice here should be applicable to your English anyway. There is a video version of this episode on YouTube, and you can see Josh's screen and can observe our conversation as if you are taking part in a Zoom call with us. You can find the video on the page for this episode on my website or on my YouTube channel. Again, the audio is not tip-top this time round, and that was caused by things like microphone echo, which I have managed to fix, but in any case, I think you can still hear everything clearly, so it should be okay. But that's it for the introduction. I hope you enjoy it, and you will find all the links that you need on the page for this episode on my website. So let's get started, and here we go. Oh, by the way, I forgot to add, you might hear lots of laughter at the beginning of this conversation. I just start talking, and then suddenly we both start laughing. And the reason for that is that if you listen closely, you'll know that I actually get Josh's name wrong. Okay, so I introduce him immediately with the wrong name, and that's why we laugh. And I decided to keep it in because the conversation just flowed from that point. Okay, all right then, enjoy the conversation. Here we go. Hello there, video viewers and also podcast listeners. Welcome to this new episode and indeed this new video, which is available on YouTube. I'm joined this time by Joel McPherson. Hold on.
Yeah, I was actually thinking if I should correct you on the document before that it's Josh, because you had my name correct in the document, but the title was wrong. So damn. I wasn't sure if I should just if I should say something or not.
So I called you Joel McPherson. I don't know where that comes from, but your name is Josh, of course.
Josh, yeah. Yeah, that's right. Josh, yeah.
Josh McPherson. Why on earth did I call you Joel? I don't know. But anyway.
J-O. I mean, I get it a lot. John, James. There's another guy who does TOEFL as well, and his name's Joseph. So often I get called Joseph. So that might be a part of it too.
Do students of English get your name wrong as well?
Yeah, sure.
They do with me. I get all sorts of things. I get luck, look, rook, right. Duke, all sorts of things.
Rook, yeah.
Rook, well, yes. Ruku in Japan.
Ruku, yeah. So I'm in Japan, and LNR is kind of an infamous problem here. So I imagine, yeah, Ruku, you would get a lot. Mm-hmm. I live in Japan, and my wife is Japanese. My mother-in-law calls me Joshu, and most people call me Joshu, because they're used to things ending with vowels, so that sounds. So same thing with Luke, Duku. And then in Korea, I would get called Joshi, so that was another one. So a lot of words ending with vowels that are almost my name. But I find them endearing, actually. I actually don't mind them that much.
Yeah, I don't mind.
Yeah.
I think it's cute. The only thing that bothers me is when people write emails to me, and for some reason I'm either called Mr. Luck or Mr. Luke or just Luck. Luck is the most common one. Yeah. Maybe it's spell check. Yes, I'm all right. I'm happy with that. Yeah. Lucky Luke.
Yeah. That's right.
It might be spell check. It might just be people's computers and so-called smartphones like automatically correcting my name. Even me when I'm writing messages sometimes, and I sign my, write my name at the end, it will autocorrect my name to Like.
Right.
So I'm like, what are you, you're my phone. Yeah. What are you doing? So right, I don't understand that.
Luke is a pretty common name. I'm surprised it's not in there, that it's not, I would understand if it's a little bit more, kind of a different type of name. Luke is pretty common.
Maybe what I'm doing is because I'm typing it quite quickly and I maybe get something wrong, instead of correcting my garbled version of Luke into Luke, it corrects right, it to right, like, right.
Yeah.
Anyway. I should do a little introduction here, Josh.
Sure, please, yeah.
Let me do that. So, video viewers, hello. So, I'm joined today by Josh McPherson, not Joel. That's someone else. Sure. But I'm joined today by Josh McPherson. Maybe I'll get Joel on the podcast at some point.
Yeah, I'm definitely Googling Joel McPherson after this.
So, Josh McPherson is from tstprep.com and also tstprep on YouTube. And right. Josh is an English teacher who specializes in helping learners of English prepare for English tests, particularly right. the TOEFL test and also the fairly new Duolingo English test, which I don't really know much about. And I thought I would interview Josh today to find out more about these tests and to get some tips from him about how to get the best result that you can. And also we might do a few test questions during the interview so we can see how good my English is, as if that's in doubt.
I'm sure you'll do wonderful. Yeah, but I don't know. It's a North American test, so the British accent we might have to work on.
Yeah. Oh dear. So I've got to get all my spelling right. I've got to spell all the words wrong. I mean,
No, that actually doesn't matter. The accent shouldn't matter. No.
Yeah.
I'm just confused.
It's like with Cambridge exams, it's the same thing. It doesn't matter that much. People do sometimes worry quite a bit about British and American English. Sure. There's an argument to say that you should probably stick to one, but actually, for the most part, it doesn't matter that much, does it? And the tests don't really care either. It doesn't make a huge difference.
No, I mean, they can't really. It's based on intelligibility is the big word. Is it understandable? And if it's understandable, then that's the most important thing. And most people agree that getting exposure to a lot of different types of accents is one of the best ways to, use English and communicate with it, because you're going to be communicating with a lot of different people speaking a lot of different dialects, a lot of different ways. So you might as well not limit yourself.
Yeah, absolutely. So Josh, first of all, I suppose before we get into the tests and stuff, I should just, generally ask you a few kind of get to know you questions, because we haven't met before.
Sure.
So yeah, you're based in Japan. Where are you from exactly?
So I'm from the States. I'm from New York originally. I'm from pretty close to the Queens Long Island border. And so I grew up around the New York City area. And then I went to school in New York, went to Korea to teach English, then came to Japan. And yeah, I mean, it's kind of a long story. But basically, you know, I'm an English teacher in Japan at this point. Yeah.
Okay. How long have you been teaching English now?
So I've been doing it for about 15 years. So I went to school to originally to be a high school history teacher. And then later I went for my master's in English language and instruction. Mm-hmm. And then so I started teaching in the private sector. I kind of floated towards working with international students in New York. I worked at a college in New York City called ASA College, and I was the kind of academic coordinator, it was called there. So we had students from all over. Most of them had student visas, and they had to improve their English. And one part of that is to take the TOEFL. And so that's kind of how I fell into it. To keep your student visa, you have to be in class physically for 20 hours a week. There's this 20 hour a week TOEFL class. So 4 hours a day, 5 days a week TOEFL. And I had to fill that time. And that's how I kind of, basically learned, about the test and learned how to teach it, because it's pretty, you know, like IELTS, it's a pretty long, complicated test. It's pretty dense. It's, you know, it's hard to kind of wrap your head around everything. That's how I fell into it. And then after that, about 3 or 4 years ago, we moved to Japan. Yeah. Because New York City is a pretty expensive place.
Well, Japan is not exactly cheap.
Right. Either. Yeah. Japan's not that cheap either. But, you know, I have a couple kids. We have her family's here. And we're also not in Tokyo. I live in Kyoto, which is like the smaller city. And yeah, we're in the suburbs. So comparatively speaking, the cost of living is much, much cheaper.
Yeah. I used to live in Kanagawa Prefecture. About 30 minutes from Yokohama.
Sure.
Nearly an hour from Tokyo. And yeah, that was a super expensive place to live. And the money just disappeared from my wallet every month. In fact, I had to live, I lived for the first like 3 months of living there when I was on a kind of probationary contract where I didn't get paid a lot. I had to live basically on Yoshinoya for about 2 months.
The beef bowl restaurant. Yeah,
it's not the best diet. I wouldn't recommend eating that, but I had to like very carefully plan my spending, and I've discovered that eating, what is it, gyudon, right?
Gyudon.
That would save me a lot of money, but it wasn't a good idea. I don't think it was a very healthy move.
Yeah, I mean, you know, you're probably, you know, younger man, you can get away with it.
I was at the time.
Yeah. I think now that the gyudon diet wouldn't work out so well. But I mean, you can eat pretty cheaply here. Well, you know, like they have the kind of famous bento boxes and the konbinis here. And you can have fresh fish and vegetables and rice and all that stuff, and a pretty balanced diet compared to like a convenience store in America, where like a day old hot dog under a heat lamp, like it's not a great diet, I would say. Yeah. Convenience store, but you can get away with a lot more here, I think, on a budget. But yeah, I mean, if you live in Kanagawa and you're making a teacher salary, the money's going to go pretty fast.
It did. Yeah. Oh, I love those convenience stores in Japan. They are fantastic. Now, we should talk about tests. Now, as a Brit, I am much more familiar with the Cambridge exams, you know, IELTS, as we mentioned, FCE, CAE, and the other ones. TOEFL is something I did teach some TOEFL and some TOEIC when I was living in Japan many years ago. Mm-hmm. So what we're going to do, right, we're going to talk about two different tests, which are really big. There's the TOEFL test and the Duolingo English test. Right. And so let's start with TOEFL, right? So could you give us an overview? Can you give me a reminder of what is involved in TOEFL? It's probably quite a long one.
It's quite a long one, but reading, listening, speaking, writing in that order. Mm-hmm. And then they actually recently, so there's a couple things to say about the TOEFL that are recent updates. One is that on August 1st, 2019, they made the TOEFL shorter. So it used to be a 4-hour test, and now it's like a 3 to 3.5 hour test. So that was, a way to kind of make the test a little less intense, I guess, for, mm-hmm. for people. Mm-hmm. So they still have three reading passages in the reading section, and they are academic texts, and they're about 700 words long. They're pretty dense. And the test is designed to see if you're prepared to go to university in America. So that all the questions are kind of based around an academic setting. So the reading passages are like academic texts that you would see in a textbook. There's a bunch of different types of topics that you can get, but something you might see in your freshman year of school.
Yeah.
With about 10 different question types and 10 different questions per passage. And so you have to remember all these kind of weird question types. There's some that are like, you know, vocabulary question and detail question. Well, it's called factual information, which is a very, you know, simple question, but mm-hmm. give it a long name. Yeah. But then you might have something like a negative factual information question or a rhetorical purpose question. And then when you start reading that kind of stuff and you're an English language learner, it becomes pretty daunting pretty intense. So that's the reading. And then the listening is a mix of conversations and lectures. There's usually two conversations and four lectures around there. After the update, they changed it, so I have to double check. But the conversations are followed by 5 questions, lectures followed by 6. You don't get to see the questions until after the listening. So part of the strategy is that you have to take good notes. You can take notes by hand. They give you a pencil and a piece of paper. And it's the same for the at-home test. So since COVID, they do an at-home test as well. So that has about 30 questions in that section, and that's followed by the speaking. The speaking has 4 questions. 4, 5. It used to be six. So I'm just trying to think of the update. I'm pretty sure it's 4. And they cut 2 of the questions, and they have an independent question, which is very simple. It just asks you all high school students should wear school uniforms. Do you agree or disagree? And then, you give your opinion. And you have to speak for 45 seconds. Mm-hmm. Now that sounds pretty simple, but when you're, told, it's very unnatural for somebody to give you a question and then tell you, okay, speak.
Yeah.
And then you have to speak for a specific amount of time. So it's like kind of a weird experience. I work with students who, they speak English every day. They have a job in America or, wherever, and they can't get a good speaking score because it's just a very strange experience, and they can't replicate that natural kind of smoothness that they usually have. So that's there's integrated speaking questions, which is a reading passage, short reading, short listening, two academic and one, just kind of like a natural conversation.
Integrated speaking questions. That's where you read something or listen to something and then you respond to it orally. Is that it?
Right. Exactly.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay.
There's 2. So there's 4 questions. So the first is independent. The second is integrated. And that integrated is an announcement. The reading is an announcement about something that changed on campus. And the listening is 2 people talking about it. And like, do you like this? No, I think it's a bad idea. And then they talk about it. And then the next 2 questions are academic questions. One is a short reading. This is question 3, is a short reading about some academic topic, and then a lecturer speaks about it. And then question 4 is just listening, where you just listen to a lecture, and then you speak about it. And you have to speak about those integrated questions for 60 seconds.
Okay, so you read the thing or listen to the audio, and then you, mm-hmm. you kind of respond to it yourself. You talk about right. it for about 60 seconds. I see.
Right.
Okay. Yes, yeah, so they seem quite unnatural situations.
Yeah, yeah. So I always get a mixed opinion from people who know about the IELTS. You know, like that they, you know, they sit down with a person and the person asks them questions, and maybe you could tell me a bit more about the IELTS kind of structure of yeah. the interview. But I know that it's an interview with somebody sitting there and you know asking you questions.
That's right.
Some people prefer that, and I think most people do. I'm going to say maybe somebody can let me know what they prefer, to speak to a computer kind of unnaturally or to sit down and speak with an interviewer.
Oh, okay. So it's you speak into a microphone and it's recorded, right. and then people sort of assess it later. Unlike right. with IELTS, where you've got someone who's talking to you, and then there's another sort of mysterious person sitting in the corner.
Oh, there's a mysterious person?
Yeah.
I didn't know about the mysterious person.
Well, they're not that mysterious, because to be honest, normally what happens is when you come into the room for your speaking test, you'll sit down and the person says, "Hello, my name's Luke and this is my colleague Dave." I don't know if they still do that. Maybe they do. "This is my colleague Dave." And then, you know, it's like, "Can I have your marking sheets, please?" And then you have to like give your papers over, and then
and
they start, and it's like, you know, sort of conversational questions at the beginning, and then you get to get like one task where you have to talk on your own for a minute or two. And then there's a more in-depth discussion where you talk, you know, give your opinions and talk in a more abstract way. So reading, listening, speaking, we talked mm-hmm. about, and then writing.
Mm-hmm. Oh, so yeah. So writing is two questions, two essays, independent and integrated. Same kind of structure as TOEFL speaking is the first question, but they switch the order. The first question is integrated, where you have to read an academic text. It's about 300 words. And then you have to listen to a lecture about the text. Usually, the text gives a couple of opinions about some type of controversial issue, like something academic, you know, like that the reasons why dinosaurs went extinct, and it's probably these three reasons. And then mm-hmm. the listening will say, well, these are the problems of these three reasons. And then you have to report on what the reading and listening said and their points of disagreement. And you're great. You want to make sure when you do the integrated writing that you don't include any information, like outside information. That it's everything was from the text. Everything was from the reading. Everything was from the listening. You don't give your opinion. You don't do anything like that.
Okay.
And then the independent writing is like TOEFL speaking question one. It's just a simple question and you give your opinion. Again, it could be, there's some differences in the questions, but there's nothing really that different. Most of the time it's just your opinion. And one big piece of advice I give to students for these questions is to pick one side. You know, like, so do you agree or disagree students should wear school uniforms? You know, maybe, you know, you have an opinion that's nuanced. You know, sometimes, yeah, they should, but maybe sometimes they shouldn't. I guess it depends on the school and the situation. But don't have a nuanced opinion on the TOEFL. just pick one side and just kind of stick with it. And the reason for that is just because it's easier to organize your thoughts and also to deliver a more structured kind of response. Sometimes people get a little lost in the weeds if they're trying to look at all the angles.
It's similar to IELTS, where you have to do an essay, a for and against essay. And one thing that I often tell students is that also they don't have to actually give their own real opinion. Because this is often the thing that people struggle with is like, what do I really think about this? doesn't matter. Just come up with some stock sort of response, or just pick some opinion. It doesn't have to be yours. Pick whatever's easiest to write an essay about, essentially. Yeah.
That problem came up a lot. And then also the problem of thinking of reasons for your opinion. You know, like, so like people like some, you know, actually saying your opinion on a topic you don't know anything about is a little weird in a lot of different cultures. Americans tend to have opinions about everything. So, you know, it's very comfortable and fine. But for a lot of people, especially being in Japan, like you know, there's some questions that ask you, like, should governments invest in space travel? You know, like you know, and a lot of people are kind of like, well, why would I have an opinion about that? That's not my job. That's not my expertise. I don't, there's no reason for me to have an opinion about that.
Yeah. And also some cultures, I think also the people will be kind of thinking, well, what should my opinion be? What am I expected to say here? So coming up with opinions can be quite difficult. I guess a good thing to practice is just to take all these topics, if you can find, you know, the sample questions and topics and things, and just practice coming up with arguments on both sides. You know, just constantly coming up with arguments for and against whatever it is. You could come up with anything. It could be even stupid things, like, you know, I don't know what, like, should cats and dogs coexist?
You know, should, I mean, they do, right? They do now.
They do,
right?
But should they? This is the question. Should they?
Should we wipe out one population?
Cats or dogs? Which ones should we allow to survive, or should it be both? You know, or whatever it is, just any stupid thing. But just practice coming up with arguments on both sides.
Right, right. I'm trying to remember this. I'm just trying to bring up this document that I had made about thinking of reasons for your opinion, and like, what are some categories for thinking of reasons for your opinion? So yeah, I just pull it. So there's one thing is that there's four categories I'd give students is to think about money, relationships, time, and education. Like, so when you have your opinion on a question, how does it affect your money? How would it affect your relationships? How would it affect your time? And then think about it in those terms to help you generate reasons, you know? Let's say, should cats and dogs coexist? Well, how would that affect my relationship with my wife who has a cat and I have a dog? You know, let's say, for example, or how would it affect my time? You know, exterminating all the cats would be difficult.
Be a huge waste of time, wouldn't it? Like, you know, we've got a big, important business meeting. Sorry, I'm taking care of these cats, putting cats in bags. Listeners, viewers, obviously, we think it's important to state that, you know, cats and dogs should coexist, and they shouldn't be exterminated unless it's absolutely necessary. Right. There you go.
Good. That's a good conclusion. That's a good conclusion to a TOEFL speaking question. That's good.
Okay. So we just had an overview. Should we? I mean, it's, you know, it's a fairly large test. I mean, you spend lots of time giving people advice and helping people prepare for the test. We can't cover everything. Should we focus on one particular part of the test, do you think?
Sure. Yeah. I thought, you know, maybe we can go over a question and have you actually give a sample response. And then using your sample response, I'll give some feedback. I'm sure it'll be wonderful and I won't have anything to say. But
this would be the speaking part then. Is that right?
This would be the speaking. Yeah. So,
okay.
By the way, you know, I have this document. I'll send it to you after this, Luke, that you can put in the description. It's a link to a document for thinking of reasons for your opinion. Can I share my screen? Is that okay?
Yeah, go ahead. I think that you've been given permission to do it on Zoom.
Okay, let's give it a shot.
Yeah, we can see it. That's great.
Okay. So that's that. And yeah, I'll send this to you afterwards and then people can just download it. Okay. So I pulled up this, this is from our site, and then we have a couple different things. We have these practice tests here, and then I pulled up a speaking question. So there's four questions in the speaking section. Mm-hmm. And this is, now usually on the test, actually, you know what? Let me give this the whole experience and get a timer here. So because that just adds a nice element of pressure.
Oh, I feel stressed now.
Yeah, it is a stressful thing to get used to. And that's something that we recommend is that trying to replicate the test conditions as much as possible is ideal, because you want to try to make yourself uncomfortable outside of the test so you can be more comfortable on test day. Like, no matter, you know, practice with difficult questions, practice in, you know, when there's not COVID, noisy cafes and things like that.
Yeah.
And then when you actually do take the test, it won't be as stressful, hopefully.
Yeah.
And you've prepared for the worst. Okay. So I'm not going to play the if I play this, this will just be somebody reading it. But so I'll just read this and then okay. I'll start the clock as well. And let me just make some room here.
All right. So this is it. Oh, God.
This is it. Oh, yeah. Yeah. So you're, I'm just going to, this is actually what I normally do with students. I just start them cold without any advice and then, okay. and then just give them feedback. So you have 15 seconds to prepare, 45 seconds to speak. During the 15 seconds to prepare, you're allowed to take notes. And you can do that. And then when it's time to speak, you can just start speaking. So I'm going to read the question and the timer will start after I finish reading. So the question is, okay. So some people prefer that their children have cell phones. Other parents think it's a bad idea for their children to have a cellular phone. Which do you prefer? Give reasons and examples to support your opinion. You have 15 seconds to prepare your response. You can begin preparing now.
Okay. Just going to think. Okay. Got 4 seconds.
All right. All right. And now you have 45 seconds to speak. You can begin speaking now.
Okay. So the question of whether children should be given cell phones is obviously a very big one. And it's one that people think about a lot. As a parent myself, it's something that I will have to deal with in a few years when my daughter is old enough to have a cell phone. So the problems, the potential problems with children having cell phones could be that we don't know what they are using the cell phones for. And with access to the internet, they might be looking at things that they shouldn't be looking at. I'm not going to specify exactly what that would be. But it's hard to monitor their usage. Whereas ultimately, I think it's important to be able to contact your children and for them to be able to contact you, which is why I would think that it's a good idea at the end of the day and the beginning of the day and the middle of the
day. All right. So
45 seconds.
I'm just going to go through this like I would have said. So how do you feel about your response?
I spent too much time at the beginning on my introduction and I didn't spend enough time actually getting into the proper question. So I didn't answer the question fully. And I have a habit of rambling on and I did that too much at the beginning and the time went too fast. That's what happened.
I wrote down a couple notes. The first thing is that, you know, you actually started. So one kind of problem that sometimes comes up with students is that they actually sound too formal. You know, that they actually sound too rigid and too much like a kind of robotic, because they know that they have to do certain things, you know, that they have to give two reasons for their opinion or one reason, that they have to address the question and all this kind of stuff. And so since they know that they have to do these things, it kind of gets in the way of sounding natural. So one of the biggest pieces of advice that happens with this type of question is to just be natural, be natural, be natural. And you did that in the beginning. Said, okay, so this is kind of like a vocal filler that I actually encourage students to do. This sometimes could be a problem if students say or a lot.
Yeah,
that will have a negative impact on your score. If you say that excessively, it hurts your flow, your smoothness. And so we recommend that students have less than 5 of those. They're very natural. I do them, you do them, we all do them. Mm-hmm. But on the TOEFL, they're grading a very small portion of your spoken language. And so you don't want to fill that too much with us and ums, basically.
Yeah. Fillers are natural and normal. Right. Even things like that, even some things that people find annoying, like saying like and things like that. I guess you shouldn't fill your 45 seconds with just,
Yeah. It's fine just as long as it's not too much. And then also you did the filler that I do all the time, which is okay, so. I do that constantly. And sometimes somebody will point it out and then I'll watch something that I did before and it's upsetting. So once we start talking about vocal fillers, I'll start noticing all of them. So let me move on.
Yeah.
Like you said, kind of rambled about the question for the first 20 seconds or so. You didn't get to your reasons until about second 22 or 23. And so you want to try to hit that first reason around the 35, 30 second mark. And so you want to just have a brief introduction. When you, what you did was you repeated the question. There's actually some kind of disagreement about should you repeat the question or not, because part of your grade is lexical complexity, which is, you know, are you using, you know, a lot of different types of words and stuff? And so it, some people say you shouldn't repeat the question because you're not showing lexical complexity. Other people say it's an easy way to start. I don't really have much of an opinion either way. I think either one's okay.
Yeah.
I know people that have done both that score well. And starting is the hardest part. So if you have some type of phrase or something that will help you start your response, then that's great. You know, if it's rereading the question, some people, you know, they want to rephrase the question. They know they're supposed to do that. But then they start trying to rephrase it in their head and it all comes out kind of weird. So usually I have students remember some type of stock phrase, like in my opinion, or first of all, generally speaking, something like that. I try not to make it a phrase. Another thing that I try to give them is phrases, because phrases are harder to connect, like first of all, or in addition to, instead of like first, second, that kind of thing.
Oh, it's easier to connect those phrases than it is. Sorry, easier or harder to connect?
Those phrases are a little bit more complicated.
Yeah.
And so that you're actually, so you're graded with a computer and a human. And part of the grade is lexical complexity. And that could be vocabulary. That doesn't mean that you start saying really difficult vocabulary. It just means that you can use vocabulary naturally and comfortably. And part of that is, I don't remember the word for it exactly, but kind of phrasal verbs, but words that are connected. Those are harder to say naturally. Like, you know, in my opinion, instead of opinion.
Yeah. Like lexical groups or lexical chunks.
Right. Something like that.
First of all, instead of just firstly. Yeah.
Right. Right. And so that's something we recommend. And then you got to your reasons, and then there was something that you did, which I mentioned not to do before, was to pick one side and stick to it. So you kind of started by saying it's kind of a negative thing. And then at the end, you were like, but I need to contact my daughter. So in the end, it's a good thing. You can do that. It's totally fine. You know, that you can say both sides of the argument. The pros and cons. But sometimes it hurts your structure, and it's harder to, like you did, you ran out of time, so you wouldn't have enough time to say both sides.
Thinking about it now, sorry, I think it would have been a lot easier for me to just be like, right, I hate smartphones, and I think my children should not have them because they're the end of the, it will be the end of the world. That would have been much easier thing to do, actually, thinking about it now. But naturally, I wanted to be balanced about it and sort of look at two sides. But so it's you don't need to do that. You can just kind of come down on one side pretty much, as long as you construct your point.
Yeah, you can. But you know what? You did the most important thing, was that you sounded natural and comfortable. And that's the hardest thing for people to do. So, you know, at the end, everything that I tell students is advice to help them. But really, whatever, you should take my advice and use it in a way that makes you comfortable and natural.
Yeah.
And because that's in my experience, that's the hardest thing for students to overcome, is for them to feel like they're comfortable taking this test and speaking for 45, 60 seconds. It's just unnatural. It's uncomfortable. It's hard. There's a lot of things to think about, and you don't know what the question is until test day. So it's very nerve wracking. It's a big thing.
I felt that sort of structurally, I didn't do well because I, as you said, spent too much time kind of outlining the question and then kind of giving one side. And then there was another point I wanted to make, which was that ultimately, you know, we want to be in touch with our kids and stuff. And so I had to rush that out within about 5 or 6 seconds, that last point. So in terms of the structure and organization, it wasn't great. Now in IELTS, you do get marked on your organization and structure and stuff like that. Would that be a big deal in this speaking test here that I did?
Yeah, I mean, it's part of your grade, structure and organization, definitely. But you know, you did answer the question and you did have some organization. So I wouldn't say that they are. It would be, you'd get more off if you went off topic, or if you, you know, weren't able to explain your reason very well at all. Mm-hmm. If you didn't have time to explain your reason. So they're not such sticklers, so very strict for actual organization, in my experience.
Yeah.
And in my experience, most of the time, the students, because when we work with students, most of our students, they have taken the test a lot. They know a lot about the test, and they just can't get their score, you know, for whatever reason. It's the only reason they would, you know, come to us, really, is that they just have this problem that they just can't, you know, kind of crack. And it's almost always that they almost know too much. That they know too much about the organization, they know too much about the structure, and just forgot about communicating.
Yeah.
And that is usually the biggest advice we give it. And we work with students to try to help them do that in different ways, you know, giving them some words and phrases, giving them some certain exercises to do. You know, sometimes there's pronunciation issues, sometimes there is structure issues. But I would say 80% of the time it's just being natural.
Yeah. Remember that, everyone. Just remember that you are a human, okay? Always good to remember that.
That's a good one.
Yeah. So, yeah, organization, not maybe getting to all the points you noted, fine. But, yeah, fluency, ease, and naturalness, and communicating your points and answering the question, I suppose this is what sounds like.
Now, and the IELTS, from what I'm explaining to you for TOEFL, do you think the IELTS is easier or more difficult?
It sounds relatively the same, but I would say it's easier because you have more time.
You have more time, okay.
I actually...
To think about your answers, or...
You have more time to think. And also more time to speak. And people might kind of say, oh, more time, that's more frightening. But no, more time is good because it allows you to just relax a little bit more. That I felt so much pressure there in that 45-second time limit. It was really hard to do it. And maybe some people might feel that, you know, it takes them 45 seconds to kind of warm up.
It seems pretty
harsh to use just 45 seconds of speaking and use that as the sample. It seems pretty harsh. So I would say, just in terms of the time limit, IELTS have you have longer in IELTS, and that feels a bit less pressured. In my feeling, yeah. Anyway.
And are you supposed to sound like? Are you supposed to give a type of organized response, or do they care that much? Is it just as long as you answer the question and sound natural?
It's the same kind of thing as in TOEFL, really. There are, organization and structure is a criteria, I believe. But task achievement is maybe the main one. You know, basically, did you answer the question that was given to you? That's the main thing. Were you able to answer the question? Because some people, I mean, I did a test in French a while ago.
How'd it go?
I got what I needed to get. So I got I got the required B1 level, which would allow me to apply for citizenship here.
Nice. Congrats.
But, I think there were three sections. I mean, it was an absolute nightmare. I mean, it was in July and it was boiling hot, and I decided to walk to the test center. So by the time I arrived, I was absolutely drenched in sweat, and I chose to wear a nice shirt, and it was all sticking to me. It was horrible. I was like, oh God, you know, felt like Hunter S. Thompson, you know, in Fear and Loathing in Las Vegas, you know, like, oh God, just like sweating while trying to answer these questions. Most of it was okay, but there was one point where the examiner asked me a question, which was, what was it now? She said, why is it harder to change something as you get older? And I thought she was referring to, you know, why is it hard to, you know, change your habits when you get older? But there was a word in there that I didn't understand, and I just kind of ignored it. But I finished saying my terrible like response, which is like, well, as we get older, it's more difficult to change because we are older, and you know, it's something terrible She was like, okay, and then at the end of my 1 minute or something, she was like, but what about eating habits? And I was like, sorry, what? What about alimentation? And I was like, And then I realized I've got no idea what alimentation means.
Ah, I see. Okay.
And so I actually had to say to her, je suis désolé. I don't know what alimentation means. And she was like, oh, okay. Yeah. Well, anyway, you've run out of time. And I was like, like that. And then at the end, I said, as she was finishing the, she was like, you know, turning off the tape player and stuff. I said to her, oh, part three was difficult. I said in French. Hmm. And she said to me, oh, that's okay. We have a lift. And I was like, thank God that wasn't in the test.
Yeah.
I think what she understood was me saying, oh, I'm really hot and sweaty. And no, I have to take the stairs. I don't know what she thought I meant, but.
Okay. I want to go on the roof and have a cigarette. I don't know.
I don't know. It's okay. Yeah. We have a lift. And I was like, I just turned around and just left. You know, I thought, right, I'm not going to show off any more of my bad French in front of this woman.
Right.
But luckily I got the result I wanted. So everything was okay in the end.
Good. Mm. And yeah, you know, and when you're working with somebody and you mess up, you know, they kind of make you feel, usually they make you feel not so bad about it.
Yeah.
You know, and then when you're taking a test and talking to a computer, you only have yourself and like, then it could, you know, it's not as reassuring as seeing another person helping you out.
Yeah, and you don't get the benefit of that human interaction, you know, that's, you know, someone just nodding along and listening to you can really put you at ease. Yeah, so practice must be the thing. Like, you know, practicing responding to these questions to a computer and so on. Do you have any other tips? Do you have any specific tips for how people can prepare then?
Yeah. You know, I mean, the big thing is record your voice. You know, that's always the hardest thing too, because, you know, your voice is not how you think it sounds. It's very upsetting when you hear your voice for your first time. But nobody likes the sound of their own voice. Everybody's in the same boat. And you know, now, we're working on this as well, that there's a lot of technology out there that speech to text recognition, you know, that you speak and it writes down what you say. If you're having trouble with certain words or certain sounds or certain, you know, whatever, then I would recommend going through having some stock sentences or having some sample responses. We have sample responses on our site, and students can repeat the responses and see if the speech to text actually recognizes the response that they're saying. For example, you know, so those are just some of the things that we recommend. It depends on the student, the trouble that they're having. If they're having trouble with like and like we talked about before, record yourself, count how many uhs and ums you have, and then go back and try to do the same response but with fewer. Doing the same response more than once is a big one, comes up pretty often, because most people, and this is just for test practice in general and just any practice in general, is that most people want to move on to the next thing. But if you can really try to restrain yourself a bit and do the same thing more than once and review what you did, that's the biggest thing. Is the biggest challenge is asking students to review their work and look at it again.
But it's really, really useful. Yeah, I find the same thing.
That's the biggest tip, really. Yeah, but then the other tips kind of depends on the student. One thing we work on with students now is that just to give you an example from my own life, like I don't like to exercise, but I'm older, so I have to do it. And there's an app that tells me what to do every day. And then at the end it claps and says, I'm wonderful. And so, you know, that really helps my motivation. And it helps me do it because I don't have to think. I think that's one big thing with test prep is just kind of sitting down and thinking like what I have to do. So, you know, we started making syllabi for students and helping students, you know, okay, you do this every day and try to practice this every day to help take the guesswork out and just kind of schedule it beforehand. And if you're studying on your own, I would recommend that as well, trying to get everything set up beforehand so you know what to do every day will help, because you just make excuses because, you know, you just don't want to do it. I mean, I don't want to exercise, so you just, you know...
It's got to be the number one problem or the number one fault that people just don't do the work and they don't do it regularly. So yeah, a planned program where you just look at the program and it says, right, today you're going to do this, this, and this.
Right.
And you don't really need to think about it. It takes the decision-making equation out.
Right.
The decision-making, you know, problem out of the equation. A system that you can follow. Yes. Should we talk about the Duolingo test then?
Yeah,
now?
Yeah. If you have a couple minutes, yeah. So We are working on it now. We don't offer anything for Duolingo yet, but we will in the next couple months. But I'm really excited about it. I think it's a better test for students. And I think that if you had to choose between TOEFL IBT and Duolingo, it's kind of a no-brainer that you would take the Duolingo English test.
Why is that?
Well, I mean, it's a lot easier for one thing. You know, it's a lot easier. It's cheaper, a lot cheaper. So this is what happened. Let me give a little bit of background about Duolingo English tests. So okay. Forever, it's been TOEFL and IELTS. And those have been the two English tests for to kind of prove yourself for business, for school, for international travel. It's basically been TOEFL and IELTS. Duolingo English Test launched from the same company that does Duolingo, the app. They launched it a while ago now, about 5 or 6 years ago, but it never really took off. And because there's TOEFL and IELTS, and so and most places, institutions didn't feel like the Duolingo English Test was a reliable metric.
Yeah, I mean, it's made by a little cartoon owl. I mean, how reliable is that? Like, you're the one who's testing my English, this little green owl.
Yeah, that annoying owl that
was my English.
Yeah, that'll send you notifications. Yeah, so they, these institutions, you know, they're like, no, thank you. We'll just take the TOEFL and IELTS. It's fine. Mm-hmm. And we don't really trust the results. There wasn't really a lot of research. TOEFL and IELTS, they have quite a bit of literature and history about the reliability. So they had trouble getting off the ground. They had a couple like Ivy League schools that didn't really matter what they took because they had other metrics. Yeah. But COVID happened a year ago, got a lot harder to book your TOEFL and IELTS test in the testing center. It took a while for TOEFL to do a computerized test online. They do it now, but it took them a while. I guess IELTS is the same. Do they do a computer test?
Yeah, there is a computer version. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. And there are these people that still wanted to study in the States, study in Canada, and that's where TOEFL usually comes in. Like IELTS is more international, whereas TOEFL seems to be it's international, but it's mostly North American universities, and so these North American universities didn't have students. These students needed to get scores, English test scores, and they couldn't get them. So Duolingo stepped in. So in the last, 6-9 months, something like that, the number of universities that take Duolingo has grown from like 300 to 3,000 or some crazy number grown by thousands. I wonder if I can get the page really quickly, but if you go to, and I'll share the link in the description as I'll share it with you, Luke, after, but, there's a link here for the institution. You could check, what institution, but this is just 10 out of 1650 pages. So, you know, whatever that is multiplied by 10, so 10, over 10,000 schools, take this test internationally. And this is just a huge increase in the last year for them. And so it's now taken worldwide. And so the stuff with, is it reliable? Does it have all the research metrics and evidence? You know, they're getting it now. They're trying to get it after the fact. And they do have, like, if you go there, there is literature that, you know, there is some, you know, backing for it. I'll run through the test so you can see what it's like and see how it is compared to the other test. But, basically it's easier because it's a lot shorter. It takes less than an hour. It's $50. And there isn't long writing or speaking things that you have to do. The longest writing assignment is at least 50 words.
Just 50 words.
Yeah. There's an essay that you have to write at the end that's considered not graded. There's a speaking and writing, speaking interview and writing essay kind of at the end that's considered not graded.
Not graded, sorry.
So there's these two final questions in speaking and writing are considered not graded. They're going to be sent to the school that you apply for. So they send the speaking and writing samples to the school that you apply for, but it's not part of your final grade. So let me just
if you want to see their writing, look at that. We're not grading it. You read it. It's a bit like that.
Anyway, it's a different approach. You know, it's definitely a different way of going about this. So they have a couple different question types that I will run through. Now they're just taking over my camera. That's why my camera might be a little weird right now. But this is the C test.
Is there any way you could expand your screen so that that's much bigger? Yeah, that's great. Yeah. Thanks.
Okay, so this is a C test.
C test.
Yeah, it's called a C test where you get a certain portion of the word and then you have to, you know, I'll just fill this in. So, and you get probably about five of these in the test. So you get a bunch of these and they're, and then you have to repeat what you heard here.
Okay. Yeah.
This one I have to type. And this is an adaptive test. So this is actually going to change as I take the test.
Okay.
So the questions will get easier or more difficult depending on whether or not I get the word these first questions correct.
Select the real English words in the list. So we've got a list of words that are, some of them are real words, some of them are not.
And you're, right. So you select, so there's for the audio listeners, you have a bunch of words and you have to select multiple words that are correct.
Mm-hmm.
And there's some that are incorrect. I'm pretty sure greasy is spelled wrong.
The previous one was like a paragraph and some of the words have been removed or some letters from the words have been removed and you just have to kind of fill them in. And I don't think it was specifically about any kind of verb forms or anything. It was almost like every seventh word or something like that.
That's the other thing with the C test is that it doesn't really follow any type of logic in terms of like it's only nouns or it's only longer words. Like there's like function words that are crossed out, like there's only an I and you have to put the T.
Okay. That's a bit like some of the parts of a Cambridge exam, like the use of English in FCE. Has similar things where you've got missing words and they're usually little words like functional words, as you said, like auxiliary verbs, pronouns, prepositions, things like that.
Right. Yeah. So they have those as well. And it doesn't seem to be, there's, from my experience and from talking to other people, there doesn't seem to be much criteria to what words are blanked out. It's just kind of like, can you understand? Still, is it still enough information for you to answer the question?
I think that is a recognized approach to test making or exercise creation is that there is a method where you just literally take a text and every ninth word, whatever it is, you blank it out. And then students have to just fill in those ninth words. And that is a kind of a way of sort of blanket across the board linguistically. It's not focusing on verbs or prepositions or conjugation or whatever. It's just, you know, every ninth word. And that actually does test your knowledge of sentence structure and lexis and things quite well, actually. There's an argument for it. Anyway.
Yeah. And there's arguments for these questions too. I mean, and so, you know, for me, saying it's easier is subjective. I mean, I just from my experience teaching TOEFL, I mean, for example, you don't have to learn about a negative factual information question, you know, or any of this other stuff. So, you know, the validity of the test, I can't really speak to. That would be something that you would talk to the Duolingo English test researchers about and that kind of thing.
Yeah.
I like it. I don't know. And so I like it for the students as well, because it's very student centered. And that's something that Duolingo is really good at. And what their mission has always been they're a juggernaut of a company, but the original purpose at least was to give access of information and education to people. And so, you know, this decreases price barrier. And it's more user friendly and people could take it from anywhere. And people couldn't do that for TOEFL or IELTS until COVID. And so That was the other thing about it.
It would be very interesting to sort of find out some study to see how reliable all the tests are in relation to each other. You know, if we can compare results in some controlled test, I'd love to find out. Yeah, I mean, you know, I'm sort of making fun of Duolingo a little bit, you know, saying that it's run by a green owl.
And right.
He doesn't have the right to grade my English. He's an owl, for goodness sake. But I don't know actually that much about the basis, the sort of methodology that goes into making the test. So could easily be decent.
There's a bunch of literature on it. And you know, they have information on their website. And that's another thing too about this test, is that it's pretty easy to understand. That was the thing that kind of how I got popular on YouTube with TOEFL, is just because the TOEFL is just so hard to wrap your head around.
Yeah.
You know, the IELTS is so hard to wrap your head around. That's kind of, you know, how people wanted to know this information, because it's hard to wrap your head around. This is not very hard to wrap your head around. When you need to improve, you have to practice. And so what we're working on is practice and some advice and that kind of thing. Yeah, so people just kind of really need to practice with the test. And in my opinion, if you know, you know, it does show if you know something or not.
Yeah.
You know, is it best for schools, you know, for universities trying to get students to come? I think it's a good fit. Do I think it would be a good fit for medical professionals? That I'm not as certain about. You know, so I think it's a great fit for schools, but like, so for example, there's a test called OET, which is for like nurses and dentists and things like that. And that's a really hard English test, because they need to know a lot of hard English for their job.
Yeah.
Whereas, you know, in a school, you do have to know difficult English, and, that is a part of it, but you know, there's a lot of things that you can learn on campus as well. One thing I'll just note also, just because it's in front of me and I don't want to forget, is that you don't get scores speaking, reading, listening, writing. You don't get a score for speaking, score for reading, score for listening. You get scores on literacy, comprehension, conversation, and production.
Okay.
And also, I can give a couple links for people so they can read more about it. But the big problem for students usually for this is production, because production is speaking and writing, basically. Yeah. It's what you produce. And so they do grade it a bit differently here as well. And it's graded out of 160, I think, is the highest score.
Right.
Yeah, so it's very different.
I think the thing that you said there about preparing people for university, though, I mean, surely the advantage that TOEFL has there is that at least students are writing essays. I mean, there might be short ones, but it does at least test their ability to do academic writing and listen to lectures and probably read certain bits of important academic text, even announcements. You know, that's pretty important.
Yeah. That's a speaking. I think it does a really good job. I've always thought TOEFL does a good job of measuring people's English. And like, it's, to me, it's a hard test to cheat. Like you either know what's there or not. In my experience working at schools, in the States, at least, they want international students. And so we had a lot of programs for English. I mean, that was my job, you know, teaching English. So we had a lot of students for English. So, you know, and they had TOEFL scores, you know, so, you know, just because they have a TOEFL score doesn't necessarily mean they can write an essay. You know, they might be able to do it for TOEFL, but it doesn't mean they're ready for a freshman levels class. But you're right in terms of the TOEFL being better suited for what they have to do in school. It definitely is better suited for what they have to do in school. That's what the test was designed to do. This, I don't know what it was designed for exactly. Don't know if it was for school, but it's something. It's being used for schools now.
Yeah, it is huge. Yeah. Right. Yeah. Well, Josh, really interesting. Thank you for telling us about the tests and stuff. And well, you know, this is what people usually say at the ends of these conversations and interviews. Where should people go if they want to find out more? Tell us about your, you know, your online work so that people can get involved if they want to prepare for TOEFL or Duolingo or whatever it is they're doing?
Sure. So tstprep.com is the site that I run, and I'm on the tube. On the YouTube is just search TOEFL TST Prep. You'll find us. And in the near future, we'll do more. Everything's going to be TOEFL. We're going to do more general English and Duolingo in the near future. So check us out there. And also, you know, I want to say, Luke, thank you for having me, man. This is really like a real treat. Like I've been familiar with your work for a while, and I really respect what you do. And thank you. Thank you so much for having me.
That's right. You're welcome. Yeah. Nice to talk to you. Nice to meet you.
Yeah, and, thank you.
You know, I guess it's dinner time now, right? Over there in Japan.
In Japan, it's bedtime pretty much. Well, not bedtime, but for the kids. Yeah. 9:15. Yeah. So,
okay.
Thank you. I appreciate it. Thank you so much.
You're welcome. You're welcome. Nice to talk to you. Good luck for the future and all that stuff. Mm-hmm. And keep in touch.
All right. All right. Sounds good. All right. Take care.
Cheers. Bye-bye. Bye.
So thanks again to Josh for his contribution to this episode. Don't forget, links are available on the page for this episode for all the things Josh mentioned there, including test practice, sample answers, tips, and videos. Thank you, as ever, for listening all the way up to this point. There's not really much more for me to add here. I haven't played the guitar on the podcast lately, but I will be coming back to that soon. But for now, I will just wish you a fond farewell, and until next time, goodbye. Bye, 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 bye. Thanks for listening to Luke's English Podcast. For more information, visit teacherluke.co.uk.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. HelloFresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
If you enjoyed this episode of Luke's English Podcast, consider signing up for Luke's English Podcast Premium. You'll get regular premium episodes with stories, vocabulary, grammar, and pronunciation teaching from me, and the usual moments of humour and fun. Plus, with your subscription, you will be directly supporting my work and making this whole podcast project possible. For more information about Luke's English Podcast Premium, go to teacherluke.co.uk/premium info.